welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Colson, the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, and you are listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that also, when this show is over, you can listen to it again if you just caught the last segment and you missed the first one, or you're on your way to dinner or a movie and you've got to get out of the car and you want to hear the rest, then you can go to our website, www.nagb.org.bs. You can go to the Learn menu and scroll down to Blank Canvas, and you can listen to all of the old shows, but you can forward the MP3 to a friend. You can download it and listen to it when it's all cold and windy and rainy like it is today. And, you know, just learn more about everything we're doing in the Bahamas in visual culture and specifically at the National Art Gallery. You can also, while you're there, go to our calendar and see what else is coming up, because aside from our awesome opening that we're having tomorrow night at 6 o'clock at the National Art Gallery, which you are invited to, we also will have a performance this weekend on Saturday as part of the NE9. There will be a poetry reading and some performative aspects. And then also we have on the 16th of December, which is a Sunday, so the day after, on Saturday the 15th, we have the performance. That's free. Again, most of these things are free and open to the public. On the 16th, we have a special Christmas tour and events happening on Sunday. Sunday, it's always free to come to the National Art Gallery. We call it our Bahamian Free Sundays, but it is in fact free for anyone who is living in the Bahamas. And so we encourage people to come to that. And then on the 21st, we have jazz in the Fiona's Amphitheater. That is a ticketed performance. But it would still be a really nice date night, Christmas jazz under the stars. So go to our calendar, see what else is happening. We have our ongoing film series. We have all kinds of stuff. And 9 times out of 10, it's free. And we really would love you to join in and be part of our cultural celebration. So turning to last but not least.
Hello.
Hello, Jody. Jody Minnis, who's been on the show a few times because you're just doing stuff all the time. All the time. So Jody also has worked at the gallery.
Yes.
And are now assisting installing the show as well as your own work. Mm-hmm. And you're finishing your studies away, yes. But right now you're home. Yeah. And you are an artist. Tell us a little bit. You collaborated on this piece. So you're a painter. You just had a show at Island House with your paintings. You're a performance artist. You're a video artist. Yeah. You do kind of all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, and this is a collaborative work. Tell us a little bit about that piece.
Yeah, so this is my third NE, by the way. So I'm excited about that. And it's a collaboration with Dr. Ian Bethel-Bennett about gentrification. So last year, spring, I wrote a research paper about gentrification in the Bahamas. And then I sent it to Dr. Ian Bethel-Bennett to read over, because I didn't think that I did the topic justice. And it's kind of hard to do research like that from abroad.
I'm sure.
Yeah, especially when a lot of the history is
unless
like our
you're in
history.
England.
Where everything works.
So there's that weird thing was we actually don't have anything here either. So it's actually not that easy to do research here either. So anywhere abroad, the Bahamas, so much of our archive is in the British Library, right?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I sent it to him. He read it over. He gave me a few pointers. And then when the call came out, he reached out to me and we decided that we wanted to collaborate. And gentrification was the topic that we wanted to touch on. Our piece is called, we have two video pieces in the show. One is called The Point to Bainetown. And then the other one is called Hair No More. So The Point to Bainetown is, it's like an experimental video in a way where the both of us in two separate cars drove from Market Street onto Wolf Road, Wolf Road onto Blue Hill Road, Blue Hill Road onto Bay Street. And we did it from two like different perspectives to just to see the change in the demographics and the city once you get from Bainetown onto Market Street through Gregory's Arch and then onto like the northern side of Market Street. And just to show that gentrification is real, and I think that when in the newspaper as well, there was the tax-free zones that were happening for Over the Hill community development is what they phrased it as. And then the late Bradley Roberts said that that this will cause gentrification. He did call the PM out on it and said, well, if you create these tax-free zones, from 1967, we've been trying to do something with the upscaling and revitalizing of these towns. But if you do these tax-free zones, gentrification is imminent. Mm-hmm. And then there was a gentleman named Andrew Allen who responded to it and said that gentrification is what this island needs. And I was like, oh, that's an interesting dialogue.
I suppose if you think that the people themselves that are living there will become gentry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. But I think that's generally not what gentrification means.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And through my research, I think one of the biggest things that we have to think about, or I don't think that is talked about, is gentrification pushes for people leaving the area. So once an area is gentrified, the pre-existing residents will leave.
Get pushed out. Yeah.
They get pushed out. Community development doesn't work in that way. Mm-hmm. So community development is basically the community decides. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about urban development and revitalizing these spaces, it has to be from a way that, from a community development standpoint, mm-hmm. or it could get into gentrification really quickly.
Right.
So
people from outside the community going
right.
inside the community. But surely there must be laws about that if you're getting the tax free. No, and Avery's making a face.
Well,
I mean, if you want to get the tax incentive, it must be more than just...
Yeah,
you know,
there's a whole,
surely you can't just go buy a building and move into the neighborhood and get the tax incentive.
You must have
to show some kind of historical, who knows, there's a whole political...
Yeah, no, I read the act. I read the bill. And it's very, like a lot of our laws, it's very ambiguous in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about leasing, and it talks about the fact that you have to give them like so much information about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But also one of the things that happens with gentrified areas is that the pre-existing residents of the space may rent their spaces out to
sure.
higher income people,
yeah.
and that aids in the pushing out of other residents. So
mm-hmm.
even if you still have like these Bahamian owners in the space, there's...
Well, you need to have rent-controlled spaces.
Exactly.
Right. That's what you need to have, right? For historical residents, you need to have rent control.
Right. And I think that through my research, these are conversations that need to mm-hmm. be had.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure if they
Because, again,
are.
That's how New York... I mean, not that New York hasn't been like crazily gentrified, but that's why Manhattan is still kind of diverse in terms of its population.
Right.
Because even though there are these areas that are extremely expensive, there are so many rent-controlled apartments
right.
that you still have a kind of... authentic group still living there and that live and work on the island.
Yeah, so...
But nonetheless, I mean, still people obviously are getting pushed out to
yeah.
further areas. And the question here is, like, where are you going to get pushed to, right?
Right. So with the Point to Baynetown, it's kind of weird because, like, the Point actually, if you were to look at the zoning lines, the point is actually considered to be in Baynetown in a way. Yeah, if you think about, like, the zoning
yeah.
of it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Because the road goes all the way down to the ocean. Yeah.
Right, yeah. So the point is actually, like, a $200 million endeavor, you know?
So let's hope they don't get the tax incentive.
Yeah.
No offense.
And it's, like, and it is a, it's townhouses. It's not,
yeah.
I think a lot of people thought that it was a hotel,
mm-hmm.
But it's townhouses, it's condominiums and different mm-hmm. things like that. So these are people that are coming here to live, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
And then when you have Baynetown being originally bought by, or at least the property bought by Alexander Bain, who was a descendant of a Scottish man and an African woman who bought up all of the land and then sold it to free slaves and other black people in that town. And you just think of like that like dynamic and that juxtaposition. It's kind of crazy to think about. And then to... In further investigating, having conversations with Ian about places within that top area that I didn't know about, that I didn't
mm-hmm.
know existed,
mm-hmm.
and exactly where they existed,
mm-hmm.
is really, really crazy. I think the more that I research and find out more about Bahamian history, I've lived here all my life, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
It's so much you just don't know. And then you think of... these different times and pockets being isolated from
mm-hmm.
each other. So if you think about what happened in like the 1930s to like the 1960s, us being desegregated in 1956,
mm-hmm.
thinking about the fact that the British Colonial Hilton and the Reinhardt Hotel, which was opened by C.R. Walker,
mm-hmm.
they
so black people had somewhere to stay, basically,
mm-hmm.
because
right.
they couldn't, yeah. I can't believe the British Colonial Hotel is still called the British Colonial Hotel, right. By the way. I think
it might be
time for a title change.
They were opened around the same time.
Yeah, you know?
And then if you look at the condition of the Reinhardt Hotel versus the condition
of... Sure, but that also speaks to what we value as Bahamians too, right? So again, you know, I mean, not to downplay the colony and the British Colonial Hotel,
definitely.
But again, I think, you know, we have a responsibility as Bahamians also to care about these places.
Yes.
And I think we know that we don't maintain things very well.
Right.
And that we like to leave the past behind and build something new and shiny.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And let the old things kind of rot. And that's sort of, you know, again, the sad tragedy of what's happening in a lot of the over the hill communities, these beautiful, beautiful places. And sometimes, bizarrely, since we're talking about tourism and its effect, you know, it's got this negative effect, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
But of course, if you take, whenever I take tourists over there, all they see is the beauty, right?
Yeah.
And like, oh my gosh, this place is amazing, and how beautiful, and why don't you just paint that one? And I would, you know, and I think sometimes we don't own well the things that remind us of a past that maybe we'd prefer to forget, right?
Definitely.
And that are uncomfortable. And
I think that's what we wanted to portray as well, that, you know, we have a responsibility to this space, you know, and there's a lot of development that we can do as a community. And even if you think about and we also touch on the Southern Recreational Park, which received a $300,000 donation from Albany, Bahamas.
I heard six, but maybe 300.
It's 300
and six. They're the three.
Yeah, they split it. So the first thing, the first wave of money that they got was, I think it was like $60,000 or something like that. However you split $300,000 in the middle. But they got that. And I think it was just as recent as November that was gifted to them for the reconstruction of that area. And the construction's happening now, you know. And then you think about the history of that space and who spoke, like Martin Luther King Jr. spoke on that space.
Yep.
And it said that Marcus Garvey.
I think Marcus Garvey,
as well.
Marcus Garvey too, yeah.
So we just took a bunch of information, put it in a video, and we're like, you watch this. You do with this what you please, because it's hard to force, I mean, and it's hard to not force, but it's hard to force your views on people, especially with information as sensitive as this. Yeah, so I think that's just what we want to do. Start the conversation about it. Understand that, you know, I'm the age difference between Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett me, you know, about these conversations.
Yeah. Well, and what you've seen in your lifetime. So, I mean, I know, Dave, that part of your, to just loop some other people now in, Dave, part of your practice involved driving around a lot, right? So a lot of your early works are like, again, an homage to all these beautiful middle class homes, especially the kind of 50s and 60s ones, you know, built by the kind of hardworking middle class Bahamians coming up, you know, in that
cut
era of independence.
Yeah.
Cut out of rock and with a glass. And I would imagine you've seen in your lifetime, do you still go and drive around those same neighborhoods when you come back?
Not as much, but certainly, yeah. I mean, I do to some extent. I mean, it's very sad to see what's happening in a lot of the places. It's amazing when you think of the changes that took place here, say, in the 50 years between, say, the 30s and the 70s, say, the 40 years between the 30s and the 70s, and then now between, say, the 70s and where we are today. I mean, particularly for over the hill, there's been very little development over there at all.
I
mean, there are people still walking to the pumps
for water. Yeah,
and to a lot of people, that's cute and it's quaint. But it's if you're living that reality.
Exactly. Yeah,
you
know? Yeah, of course not.
I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, that has all kinds of implications.
There's like still like a mysticism about Bayntown. And like, I think people... It's weird. People don't want to talk about it, but if you start the conversation about it, they're like, "Why are you talking about it in this way? Like, check your language." Or like, it's just a very protected space because of, I think, what it means to a lot of people historically.
Yeah, of course, and I think that's understandable. I mean, we had something like that happen at the institution, right? Whereas we were doing a walking tour, and it was referred to as an inner city, and somebody got really very upset about that and was like, "It's not an inner city; it's the historic center, and you have to watch your language." And, you know, to a certain extent, they're right. Yes, it is the historic center, but most of the young people I know and I come into contact with, and I'm talking about kids and young adults and people that have gotten out of a gang life and or some that are still in and artists from that community and 95% of them refer to where they live themselves as an inner city.
Right.
So, you know, again, or a ghetto or whatever it is. And, and again, I understand this desire to not portray it that way.
Because all of these people have moved out of those areas. You know, they're no longer...
Well, some still live there. Yeah, but but again, you know, I think you have to kind of in some way like portray that the two coexist. Yes. Right? It is this area of greatness. It is this area where greatness happened and still does to this day. Because again, we also do portray always the negative and not the positive, right? But there's also this other reality, sort of living on top. These two realities kind of colliding, and I think again that speaks to a lot again about this push and pull between paradise and reality.
Right, and that's one of the changes I think. I think when I first came here in the 70s, really middle class people were still living over the hill. You know,
and some middle class people still
maintaining
are.
The
that's
property.
What's so interesting again about over the hill is that there will be a property beautifully maintained.
Yes,
maybe two or three even next to a couple. So it's this kind of, like I said, it's kind of two realities living really side by side. Yeah. So it's not like one or the other. I mean, and I think that's what kind of makes it so interesting.
But it's also very sad what's happening, I mean, downtown as well. I mean, just look at Cumberland Street, for instance, you know. I mean, Antonius's little place is like an oasis there. You know, everything else is falling around. And there's beautiful buildings there.
But it's true. Yeah. Some of the office buildings are maintained.
And it's not just the visual aspect of the buildings. I mean, these buildings were made out of limestone that were cut by hand, and that were built. You know, these are of cultural significance in themselves. Just the whole process, how they came about.
But I think too that it's with all of this like happening and all of this change up, because a lot of things happen while we are having these conversations. You know what I mean? And I think that it's up for us as Bahamian people to really try to grasp the whole of one. Rewriting our history in the way that we present these spaces to ourselves and actually presenting these spaces to ourselves. You know what I mean? Instead of ignoring it, because I did not know about the Cat and the Fiddle. Like,
oh, really? Okay, yeah, but that's you're young. So us old people.
But that's something that I should know about. Is especially understanding who Freddie Munnings is and different things like that, you know? So.
Well, it wasn't just a Cat and the Fiddle. There was a Silver Slipper.
I don't remember those ones, but like I remember Charlie's and the Pink Pussycat. And my dad told me when he was young, they would go to like 25 clubs in a night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that was the reality, right?
Yeah.
So very, very vibrant, lively, beautiful, you know? Yeah. And again, like not without its problems, obviously, not without like all these underlying sociological issues and the colony still being in full effect. But, you know, so it's like how do you keep the good? You know, it seems like sometimes we threw away it all, right? We threw away the bad and the good together, and we're sort of left trying to figure it out, right?
Yeah. But I definitely hope that there's more history being written over the next 5 years immediately, you know, from multiple perspectives. Because there's a lot now, but I think that there needs to be, like, a lot more. Just to, like...
Well, and things being lost, people, places. Being lost to development or you know, or death or what have you. And, you know, all that kind of knowledge and memory and history then goes with it.
Yeah.
But that's also part of, like, what you're all doing, because in a way you're writing the histories as well, right, as artists.
Sure.
You know, you're reflecting the times and you're commemorating the things you see. And that's going to be part of the record, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel any kind of responsibility with that? And then that goes to all three of you.
Hell yeah.
Responsibility to...
In fact, that you're kind of creating a record yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Are you aware of that when you're working?
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Good. Because you know what? It's going to be on show in the National Art Gallery now. Not just on Thursday night, but in 100 years.
Yeah.
Right? So, and on that, I know you're all laughing. It's true. Yeah.
It's
you know what? When we're all gone, your artwork's still going to be there, right?
Yeah.
And hopefully part of the National Collection and there for people to see. So... we're out of time, because that's what happens when we start getting involved in really good conversations. Yeah. So I want to thank Jody Minnis, Avery Wright, and Dave Smith being here this evening and sharing with us their work that you will be able to see as part of The Fruit and the Seed at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas, which opens tomorrow night at 6 p.m. It's from 6 to 9 p.m. There'll be music, there'll be food, there'll be drinks, there'll be artists, there'll be art. So come out and celebrate Bahamian excellence with us at the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. We look forward to seeing you. Thank you all three for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's always good to see you. And please, audience, let's see you tomorrow night. You've been listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson. I'm the director of the National Art Gallery of the Bahamas. And you've been listening to The Blank Canvas on 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Thank you so very much for listening, and have a great night.